Ephesians chapter 4, verse 28. I'm not going to preach real long this evening. This is a holiday weekend. Tomorrow's going to be a nice day of fellowship. We look forward to that always. But I do want to expose the word to you this evening, and I want to talk to you about teaching your young people to work. The title of the message this evening is, Let Him Labor Working with His Hands. Let him labor working with his hands. The Apostle Paul writes in verse 28 of chapter 4, Let him that stole steal no more. Young people, listen to me. If you work a job, take a wage and don't produce what you're supposed to produce. You have stolen your wage that day. Okay, let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him work or labor, working with his hands the thing which is good. Why? That he may have to give to him that needeth. You say, work so I can give it away? That makes no sense at all. Now, that's the Christian way. You know, a lot of the things that Jesus told us to do make no sense. He told us the first shall be last, and the last shall be first. If you want to be first, if you want to be the most important, then you'd be servant of everybody. If you want to be the leader, you're going to be the servant of everyone. Boy, this, you know, the way up is the way down. You go to a feast, and instead of going to the most important seat, you go to the least important seat. It's better to be invited to come to a more honored seat than it is to be asked, I'm sorry, we want the governor to sit here. You need to go sit over here at this table. There's a lot of things in the Christian circle that do not make sense, humanly speaking, but they make perfect sense, divinely speaking. And so here we labor. We learn to work and labor so that we can not only feed our families, but help others in need. That's an important thing, if we could grasp that. Let's pray together and then we'll begin. Father, I pray that you would bless the message this evening. I think of the 40% of this crowd this evening that are boys and girls and young people. I pray that you would make an impression upon their heart. And Father, for those that are dads and moms still raising little ones, I pray that you would move upon them tonight and help them to see the need of training their children upright. And one of the best things that they can do for them is teach them how to work. And Father, to be productive and to be producers, not consumers. And we'll give you glory and honor and praise in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, the Apostle Paul gave us the exhortation, let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth. You know, Paul didn't just say that. Paul followed his own example, or Paul set the example for us. For instance, in Acts chapter 20, verses 33 through 35, Paul gave us this example to the Ephesian elders. He was speaking to the Ephesian elders, and he reminded them of how he was when he was in Ephesus. He said, when I was in Ephesus, here's what he said, I have coveted no man's silver or gold or apparel, yea, ye yourselves know that these hands have ministered unto my necessities and to them that were with me. I have showed you all things, how that so laboring ye ought to support the weak, and to remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he said that it's more blessed to give than to receive. Paul didn't just tell us to work, he showed us how to work. In Corinth, Paul's example was this, and because he was of the same craft, he abode with them, that is Aquila and Priscilla, and he wrought. You know what the word wrought, W-R-O-U-G-H-T, means? It simply means he worked. Paul worked. So wrought. He abode with them. He was of the same craft. They were tent makers, and he worked. He wrought, for by their occupation they were tent makers. His example in Thessalonica, 1 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 9, he said, For ye remember, brethren, our labor and travail, for laboring night and day, because we would not be chargeable unto any of you, we preached unto you the gospel. Get that? Our labor and our travail. Travail is a term that is a birth term. It's like a woman in labor getting ready to give forth a child, and it's painful and it's hard work. And he said, I labored and travailed night and day so that I wouldn't have to be chargeable to any of you. And then he said in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 8, Neither did we eat any man's bread for naught or for nothing, but wrought or worked with labor and travail night and day, that we might be that we might not be chargeable to any of you. Not because we have not power or authority or right. It is Paul himself who said the workman, what Jesus said, the workman is worthy of his hire. But the apostle Paul said that the elder that rules well is worthy of double honor. He said the man is a man is worthy of his wages. And if a man preaches the gospel, he should live of the gospel. And Paul preached that truth. But Paul himself said, I have the right. I could take money from the church, but I didn't and I won't. He said, not because we have not power, but to make ourselves an example unto you, to follow us. For even when we were with you, this we commanded, that if any would not work, he should not finish it. Eat. So we need to teach our boys and girls to work. Because if they don't learn to work, they don't have the right to eat. And yet every boy and girl loves to set up to the table. Now they don't all love broccoli, Tom. But they all love mealtime, and they all love peanut butter and jelly, and they all love stuff that isn't good for them. We know that, but everybody likes to eat. The Apostle Paul said, well, you know what? If you're going to eat, you'd better learn to work, because if you don't work, you don't have a right to eat. I love to study Solomon's Proverbs. I did a quick, kind of a cursory view of some of Solomon's writings, and I just picked out certain words that deal with work. For instance, the word labor, Proverbs 10 and verse 16, the labor of the righteous tendeth to life, the fruit of the wicked to sin. You know, hard work is good therapy. Hard work will help a man to be righteous, and a man that doesn't work hard will usually end up in sin. Now, I want to make this plain. There's more than one kind of work. There's work. Some men work with their hands. Some men work with their backs. Some men work with their heads. But you'd better work. But those men that work are less likely to end up in wicked sin. My boy has all worked for a farmer out at the, at the west side of town. And my three oldest boys all took turns working for Hugh, and they would work long hours during planting and harvest. And sometimes they would come in after a 14 or a 16-hour day with diesel soot on their face, and they would come in, and my wife would say, son, your supper is in the microwave, and they would just look at you with this look, this kind of blank, stunned look, and they would say, you know, Sandra brought a sandwich out to the field about 6 o'clock. If it's all right with you, could I just shower and go to bed? They never said, Dad, could we have the car? Could we go to town? Could you spot us a 20? No, they were just glad to go to bed. You know, you stay out of a lot of trouble when you're tired because you've worked hard and you've produced well. And so the Bible says the labor of the righteous tendeth to life, the fruit of the wicked to sin. Proverbs 13:11, wealth gotten by vanity shall be diminished. In other words, if you don't work hard for it, it won't last long. You're a lot more careful with what you've earned with sweat and blood than what you have gotten easily. Wealth gotten by vanity shall be diminished, but he that gathereth by labor shall increase. Proverbs 14:23, in all labor there's profit, but the talk of the lips tendeth to penury. Brother Vineyard used to say, talk is cheap. And he would say, it takes money to buy whiskey, but I'm not going to say that. Proverbs 21, verse 25, the desire of the slothful killeth him, for his hands refuse to labor. You ever know anybody whose hands refuse to labor? I mean, they work harder getting out of work than if they just went ahead and did it. There used to be guys in the factory like that. Those guys, and they said, oh, the company didn't pay us enough, so we're only going to do 60% of what is required of us by the company, and that'll be enough. That's all the company expects anyway. And I said, well, it's funny. When I hired on, they told me they'd pay me $4.24 an hour. I said, after 3 months, they jumped me to $5.25. And you know what? Every paycheck I get, they're paying me exactly what they said they would pay me. And I promised them 8 hours work for 8 hours pay. They're going to get 8 hours work, not 60%, but 8 hours work. Ah, what are you trying to do? Make us look bad. And then in my stupid youth, I said, no, you don't need any help with that. That was a bad mistake because it was the union steward that I was talking to, and the union came down on me hard. 19-year-old kid with the union breathing on my back. My goodness, it was a bad scene. And for the next 6 months, I hated to go to work. The only thing that got me through that was knowing that I was leaving in 6 months to go plant a church. Blessed be God, I got out of that place. But I want to tell you, the desire of the slothful killeth him. His hands refuse to labor. Proverbs 23:4 says, get this, labor not. Why do you work? Yeah, I want to be rich. No, Proverbs says, labor not to be rich. Cease from thine own wisdom. You think I'll work hard, make lots of money, and then I won't have to work. I'll work hard. There was a cartoon years ago where it was a Mutt and Jeff cartoon, and Mutt was just laying around all the time anyway, and Jeff was working hard, and Mutt says to Jeff, what are you working so hard for? He said, so I can make lots of money. And he said, what do you want to make lots of money for? He said, so I can retire. He said, what do you want to retire for? He said, so I can lay around and do nothing. He said, I'm doing that already. You had to be there. Do you understand the difference between Mutt and Jeff? Is that Jeff had the right to lay around and do nothing. He had earned the right. But don't labor to be rich. Work because it's right. Work because God put you on this earth for a reason. Work because one day you'll stand before God and give an account of the deeds done in the flesh. And I think you'll give an account of each heartbeat. I think we'll give an account of each breath of God's air we have breathed and each glass of God's water that we've drunk. And God is going to want to know, what did you do in return for that? What mark did you leave upon the earth? I want to leave the earth a better place than I found it. I want there to be some people in heaven who wouldn't have been there if I hadn't have lived. I want there to be some things done. You know, I've got this little piece of property that I continue to carve away at. And one day when Nathan was there, back during the anniversary, Nathan and I got in the car and went somewhere, and he looked and he says, Dad, I remember when this place was just growed up in brush. Daniel, do you remember when we first started cutting all of those thorny locusts? And Michael says, who planted all of these thorny locusts? Now, you have to understand, we bought the place from a boy named Adam Bash. Okay, Adam Bash. But I said, I think old Adam planted them. I meant Adam like as Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, and Adam sinned. And because of that, the curse came, and so there's thorns. But Michael, he didn't connect that. Michael was only about 8 at the time, and he's thinking of Adam Bash. He says, why would he have planted all of them? Poor little Michael, I mean, he was hauling limbs taller than he was, dragging him down over the hill, and we've cleared brush and cleared brush. We built a garage and built a house, and we keep whacking away at it. And we make slow progress, but I want that corner at St. Patrick. I want those Catholics that live at St. Patrick. I want them to know that a Baptist lives there. You guys should be more excited about this. I'm trying to be a little funny here. I guess Mother says there's nothing worse than somebody trying to be funny who don't know how. But you know what? We should take care of our place. We should try to make the world a better place because we live. Don't labor to be rich. Labor because it's right. Labor because God gave me life. Labor because at the end of this life, I want to be able to show the Lord I used my life profitably. I worked for you. I did what was right. Under the word work, he says, the wicked worketh a deceitful work, but to him that soweth righteousness shall be a sure reward. Proverbs 18:9, he also that is slothful in his work is brother to him that is a great waster. You hear that? Slothful in work, brother to him that's a great waster. Proverbs 20, verse 11, get this, boys and girls, even a child is known by his doings, whether his work be pure and whether it be right. I was thinking about kids working. We're going to talk about that more in a little bit, but kids need to learn to work when they're young. You say, I'm going to work hard when I grow up. What's wrong with right now? What's wrong with working hard? You say, well, I'm just a kid. There's not much I can do. There's a lot you can do, way more than you can believe you could do if you just set your mind to it and set your back to it. Proverbs 21:8, the way of man is froward and strange, but as for the pure, his work is right. If you're pure of heart, your work will be right. Proverbs 24 in verse 27, prepare thy work without and make it fit for thyself in the field, and afterwards build thine house. Sometimes we get our priorities confused, don't we? What Proverbs is saying is, look, if you've just bought a homestead and you're getting ready to build a house and you're trying to decide whether to build your house or plow your field first, live in a tent. Get your field plowed. Prepare the field because that's what's going to make your living. Prepare the field. If you have to live in a tent until the crops are planted, then you can build your house. Proverbs 16:3, commit thy works unto the Lord, and thy thoughts shall be established. Proverbs 24:12, if thou sayest, behold, we knew it not, doth not he that pondereth the heart consider it? And he that keepeth thy soul, doth he not know it? And shall not he render to every man according to his works? Listen to this. Proverbs, Solomon is saying, the Lord will render to every man according to his works. And if you say, hey, we didn't know, that's nothing but an excuse. Did you know that? I didn't know. Yeah, you did. Don't you know that God knows your heart? Excuses won't cut it on judgment day. Proverbs 31:31, give her, that is the Proverbs 31 woman, give her of the fruit of her hands and let her own works praise her in the gates. A woman's work is never done. She seeketh wool and flax and worketh willingly with her hands. You know, she can, she cooks, she sews, she cleans, she washes clothes, she works. And then somebody wants to know, and so where do you work? I'm a housewife. No, I mean, where do you work? Well, that's a dumb question. You all know that home economy is one of the hardest jobs there is. Mother used to say, a man works from sun to sun, but a woman's work is never done. I think she liked it because it rhymed. Diligent, Proverbs 10 and verse 4. He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. Now, I want you to pay attention to these words like diligence that are connected with work and with labor and so forth. The hand of the diligent shall bear rule, but the slothful shall be under tribute. Proverbs 12:27. The slothful man roasteth not that which he took in hunting, but the substance of a diligent man is precious. The other day I was picking green beans. I was so tired of picking green beans. I was really tired of picking green beans. They had come in pretty good, and really it was about the second or third time around. I mean, we've had several times that the beans we thought they were almost gone, and then they sprouted up and growed more green beans, and I was picking green beans. And you know what? I was tempted to just start pulling vines. Green beans are a lot easier to pick if you pull the vine up by the roots and hold it up and then shake it and then just pick them off like this. Trouble is you can't put it back in the ground. It won't grow again. And if we don't get some rain, it's not going to grow again anyway. But I was so tired of picking green beans, but I couldn't get this one verse out of my head. The slothful man roasteth not that which he took in hunting. And I kept on picking green beans. And then I came inside and I was sick of looking at green beans. But then I snapped them. Broke the ends off and snapped them. A whole canner full, it turned out, 7 quarts. The slothful man roasteth not what he took in hunting. So I broke them, snapped them, put them in water and washed them. And put them on the stove the next morning and blanched them. And then Elsie came home and canned them. I'm tired of green beans for a while. But the slothful man roasteth not that which he took in hunting. You know, right's right, wrong's wrong. It's wrong to plant them and then waste them. You understand what I'm saying? You planted it. You tilled the garden. You planted the beans. They grew. God let them grow. He gave them sunshine and rain. He let them grow. So pick them and fix them. You say, well, I'm tired of green beans. I don't want them. Tom, my garden growed broccoli. Tom says, what am I going to do? Then give it away. But don't let it go to waste. The Bible tells us the slothful man's brother to him that's a great waster. Do you understand? There's a spiritual tone to our diligence. Proverbs 13 and verse 4, the soul of the sluggard desireth and hath nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made fat. Proverbs 21:5, the thoughts of the diligent tend only to plenteousness, but every one that is hasty only to want. Proverbs 22:29, seest thou a man diligent in his business? He shall stand before kings and not before mean or common men. Proverbs 27:23, be thou diligent to know the state of thy flocks and look well to thy herds. I love Proverbs 4 and verse 23. It's not the word diligent, but the word diligence. Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. You want to know what some real work is to keep your heart right. That's harder than planting green beans. How many of you have a little trouble keeping a watchdog on your heart's attitudes? Keeping them straight, keeping them right. Then I looked up the word slothful, and some of these are the same words, because slothful often is balanced against diligence. The hand of the diligent shall bear rule, but the slothful shall be under tribute. The slothful man roasteth not that which he took in hunting. There's that thought again. But the substance of a diligent man is precious. The way of the slothful man is an hedge of thorns, but the way of the righteous is made plain. He also that is slothful in his work is brother to him that is a great waster. Listen to Proverbs 19 and 24. A slothful man hideth his hand in his bosom and will not so much as bring it out to his mouth again. In other words, I'm so lazy, I don't want you to know that I have a hand. If you knew I had a hand, you might make me do something. So I'm going to hide my hands. I'm going to put my hand away, and maybe you won't ask me to do anything. Proverbs 21:25, the desire of the slothful killeth him, for his hands refuse to labor. The slothful man saith, there's a lion in the street, I shall be slain in the streets. Excuses. I went by the field of the slothful and by the vineyard of the man void of understanding. And then he describes how they were all laid waste and grown up in nettles. As the door turneth upon his hinges, so does a slothful man upon his bed. Proverbs 26:15, the slothful hideth his hand in his bosom. We've read that already. Slothfulness casteth into a deep sleep. Get this, and an idle soul shall suffer hunger. What did Paul say? You don't work, you don't eat, right? You don't work, you won't eat. You don't work, there won't be anything to eat. Idleness, Proverbs 31 and verse 27, she looketh well to the ways of her household and eateth not the bread of idleness, the Proverbs 31 woman. The sluggard, Proverbs 6 and verse 6, go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways and be wise. Proverbs 6 and verse 9, how long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? Proverbs 10 and verse 26, as vinegar to the teeth and as smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard to them who send him. You know, here's a boss, and he sends a man out to do a job, and the guy is a sluggard, and he gets out there and slugs around and takes a half a day to do a job that should be done in an hour or two. What's the scripture say? He's that sluggard. That sluggard is like smoke in his eyes. It's like vinegar on his teeth. Proverbs 13 and verse 4, the soul of the sluggard desireth and hath nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made fat. Listen to this, Proverbs 20 and verse 4, the sluggard will not plow by reason of the cold, therefore he shall beg and harvest and have nothing. Well, it might rain today. You know, maybe we just best not plow. It looks like it could rain. You know, I looked on the internet and there are some clouds out around Kansas City. Maybe we just ought to stay in today. The sluggard is wiser in his own conceit than seven men that can give a reason. Let me give you some conclusions. Conclusion number one, work is a righteous thing. It is associated with righteous words like diligence, faithfulness, productivity, honesty, righteousness, etc. Work is a righteous thing. You can't be a righteous man without righteous work. Some kind of work. Now, I bear in mind, and I remind you, that doesn't mean every man works with his hand. Some men work with their brains, but they're working a productive work. They're doing something that needs to be done with their brain. Some men work with their back. Some men work with their hands. Some men work with a combination of all of those things. But work is a righteous thing. Number two, work is not part of the curse. I love to study Genesis, where the Bible tells us that God called Adam and made him the dresser of the garden, and that was before Satan came and before sin came and before the fall came. Adam was working before there was a curse. By the way, parents that punish their kids with work, that's counterproductive. You know, a parent says, you were a bad boy. I'm going to make you clean the garage. I hate to tell you this. If you've done that, I hate to say this, but that's really just not smart. That's teaching the boy that work is a punishment. Work is not a punishment. Work is a reward. You know what I would do to punish a boy? I'd say, I'm going to clean the garage and you're going to have to sit on a stool and watch me. I'm not going to let you help. You're going to miss out on all the fun. You can sit there and breathe the dust while I do the work and enjoy the labor. And that, you know what the kid will get? He'll get the idea, you know, that I'm tired of sitting on this stool. I want to work. I want to do something productive. Let me help. No, you've been a bad boy. You sit on the stool. You watch the work. It's bad people that sit by and watch work, not good people. Work is not part of the curse. Work is a spiritual thing. This is number three. Jesus did it. Jesus spent his first years as a carpenter doing physical work with his hands. I find this really a blessing. He who made the universe, the creator person of the Godhead who made trees by the spoken word, and let there be trees. Now as a carpenter, he cuts them down, dries them. I don't know if they killed, dried them, but seasons the timber. And then he cuts the wood into lumber and he makes ox yokes or whatever carpenters in those days made. The very God who spoke them into existence, he now is working with his hands that thing which is right. And listen, when he became a preacher, a rabbi, he was hardworking. You're hard-pressed to find Jesus at leisure. All the time, if he wasn't walking with men, he was walking with the Father. All the time, though, he was working. Jesus worked. The apostles worked. Peter, James, and John were fishermen, and they worked hard. They knew what it was like to work all through the night while others slept. Paul did it. He made tents and planted more churches than any other New Testament preacher. The early Christians worked. It's a spiritual thing to work. You can actually be close to God while you work. Work's a righteous thing. It's not part of the curse. It's a spiritual thing. Get this, in the Old Testament, under the law, men worked first in the energy of the flesh and then they rested. They worked 6 days and then rested on the seventh. But in the New Testament, the Lord gave us a new principle of labor. He said, in Christ, you shall rest first. And then out of that rest, the rest of grace, you shall work in the energy of the Spirit the rest of the week. So as Christians now, our first day of the week is to rest. And out of that rest, we have energy to work the rest of the week. So instead of working and looking toward our day off, we've already had the day of rest that Jesus gave us. And out of that day, out of gratitude for what Jesus, our Sabbath, has done for us, then we work the remaining 6 days of the week. I think in raising kids, here's some thoughts that I want to share with you before I close. If you're raising boys, you need to teach boys about mechanic tools. You need to teach them about wrenches. They need to know all the sizes. You need to take little boys out to the shop and lay out your number 6 wrench and your number 7, your 8, your 10, your 11, your 12, your 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, all the way up to your 19 millimeter wrenches, lay them out, and then get your quarter inch wrench and your 3/8 and so forth. Lay all your wrenches out. And have the boys learn those wrenches. One day you'll be underneath the car and you'll say, hand me a 3/4 inch wrench. And he'll say, what? No, you don't want him to say what. That's not the right answer when I'm underneath the car. Okay? That's not the right answer. The right answer is, yes, sir. On the double. And I always say, run. I could walk. Huh? Teach the boys the sizes. Teach them what a ratchet wrench is. Teach them what a 3/8 drive is, what a 1/4 inch drive is, what a 1/2 inch drive is. Teach them what an extension, what a 6-inch extension looks like, and what a 3-inch extension looks like, and a 9 and a 12 and so forth. Teach them what they are. Teach them those, you know, teach them how to read a tape. You know, you hand your boy a tape measure and he goes out there and how long is that board? And he goes and he pulls it out and he looks at it, and you're growing old while he's trying to figure out. Well, it's the next little line next to the number 83. Which side of 83? Well, it'd be on the left side of 83. Is it closer to 82 or 84? Oh, it's closer to 82. Okay, and it's two little marks? Yeah, well, that'd be 82 and 7/8. Listen, boys need to learn how to do things like that. And dads, listen, if you raise a boy that can't read a tape measure and he can't pick a wrench out of the box and hand you the right wrench, you have made a major fail, in my opinion. You need to teach boys how to do things. They need to know wrenches and ratchets and sockets, standard and metric. They need to know all of the different kind of screwdrivers, and there's more than two. More than two different kinds. They need to recognize woodworking tools like tapes and saws. And there's more than one kind of saw. They need to know what they are. You need to take them on a tour of the shop and show them hammers and squares and tri-squares and sanders and planes. And teach them what each tool is used for and teach them the safe operation of that tool. They need to know how to maintain a car. They need to have a basic knowledge of engines and transmissions and tires and wheels and brakes and exhaust. Listen, if you can teach a boy how to maintain a car and how to maintain his house, you've saved him several thousand dollars in a lifetime. He's going to have to pay someone to do things that he ought to know how to do and that you should have taught him. He needs to have basic knowledge of home repair. He needs to know what a circuit is and how to do a little electric wiring, and he needs to know something about plumbing so his wife doesn't have to fix the sink all the time. My wife fixes the sink, but it's just because she gets tired of waiting on me to do it. He needs to know something about heating and air conditioning and painting and roofing. He needs to know some of the basic things about home maintenance. But that isn't all he needs to know. Dads, he needs to know how to do laundry. He needs to know how to run a vacuum cleaner. He needs to know how to prepare a basic meal. He needs to know a little bit about taking care of the sick and at least how to sew on a button. You know, it's amazing when boys go off to college how few of them know even how to do their first load of laundry. Some mother has pampered them and pampered them and pampered them all their life and done their laundry, and the boy goes off to college and he's dumbfounded when he looks at the washer. And here he is bending over reading instructions because nobody's taught him. If you're raising boys, they need to know how to do these things. If you're raising girls, she needs to know how to cook a meal. Lots of meals. She needs to know the basic food groups so that she can be balanced in her meal preparation and make the right thing. She needs to learn how to shop and how to shop smart. She needs a knowledge of baking and broiling and frying and roasting and canning. I'll never forget the first time when Elsie and I got married. She said, "What do you want to eat? We're coming back from our 3-day honeymoon." Believe me, it was nothing to brag about. It amounted to riding in a car from North Carolina through St. Louis, through Cahokia, and back to Chicago. That was our honeymoon. But we're on the way back, and we're getting ready to stop and buy groceries to supply our little apartment. And she said, what do you want for our first meal in our apartment? I said, "I am dying for a roast beef. I haven't had a roast beef in a coon's age." She said, "Okay, you pick it out." So we go to the Kroger store or whatever that store was there, and I picked out a small roast, and I said, "This should be good." I knew I was in trouble when we got back to the apartment and she pulls out the frying pan and says, "How long do I fry this?" And I said, "Honey, you only brown a roast, you don't fry it." I said, "Have you never cooked a roast?" She said, "I'm from North Carolina. We fry everything." Back in those days, she didn't have her Missouri, North Carolina act. It was just pure North Carolina. "We fry everything." And so I showed her how to make a roast. She was a good student. I've never had to show her another one. But you know what? It's a crime for a woman to raise a girl that can't cook a meal. I mean, that woman ought to be sent to prison for raising a girl that can't cook a meal. I remember my Uncle Mike talking to my cousin Linda about Linda's daughter who had gone to college and gotten a college degree in law and was going to get a big job her first year out of college with a big, high-sounding, I mean, she was going to make, in those days, $50,000 was a tremendous starting wage, and she was going to make so much money her first year. And my Uncle Mike is a truck driver. He's driven trucks for 45 years now, and Uncle Mike looked at Linda and he said, "Can she cook a meal?" Linda said, "No, I doubt that." He said, "Then I'm not impressed. I don't care what she makes her first year. If she can't cook a meal, I'm not impressed." In my opinion, Uncle Mike had a good point. Girls need to know how to cook. They need to know how to sew and make a dress and make culottes and know how to alter a garment. They need to know the finer things of cleaning and crafting and caring for little ones and for the aged and for the sick. And by the way, girls, you need to know how to change a tire and how to jump a battery that's dead. There's a few things like that that you need to know too. And then, girls, I hate to tell you this, but you need to have a saleable skill. You need to go to college and get some kind of a saleable skill. Because the truth is, in this life, you can't count on the man. In this world, there's many men that have failed their women. Many men won't work. Many men won't provide. I pray to God you don't get one of those men. I urge every dad here to stand up on your hind feet and fight like a wildcat if she goes bringing home some worthless dude and says, "Oh, but I love him, Daddy." I don't care what you have to do. Hit him in the back of the head with a 2x4 when he's not looking. Hit him with a tire iron. I'm not sure what you need to do there, but run the guy off. Get rid of him. Girls, wear a long high heels and take the high heel off and stab him right in the eye with it. But don't marry some worthless dude that won't provide for you. You need to be one of those people that is prepared, though, because you never know. And you could be one of those people whose husband dies early for some reason or another. And you could be left to raise 4 or 5 little kids, and without a saleable skill, you're going to be left to make beds in a motel. Not that that's not honorable work. It's hard to feed a family doing that. Or waiting tables at a restaurant. You understand what I'm saying? I close with this thought. I heard a lecture years ago and I've added to it. And I want you to think about these things. We need to teach our kids how to work. We need to teach them how to work hard. It's not just enough to put in your time. We need to be productive. Whether we're self-employed or employed by another, we need to be productive. We need to give them their wage back and more. We need to teach the kids to work and to work hard. We need to teach kids to work smart. Teach them how to use a tool instead of their back, how to use a lever to move an item that's too heavy to lift or pick up. Teach them how to work smart. You know, you don't get to be aged without hurting yourself, without learning how to work smart. And that doesn't happen by nature. Boys need to be taught how to work smart. Here's the next thing. They need to be taught how to work without supervision. And you know, that's how Matt won Naomi. To this day, Matt doesn't realize it, but he won Naomi when he worked for Levi in the kitchen at school. And Levi would tell me, "Dad, Matt is a good boy." He said, "He's the only person I have working in the kitchen who will do his job without having to be watched." He said, "I can leave Matt alone with the job, and when I come back, the job is done and more." He's a good man. And when a girl's brother brags on a guy, a dad takes note. And I took note. Here is a guy that will work without supervision. He doesn't need somebody to boss him around to tell him what to do next. He sees the work, and that's the next thing. Teach our kids to see work. When I finish one task, look for another. If I'm still on the clock, look for another. This task is finished. There's got to be something else that needs done. I remember working in the factory, and my boss couldn't believe it. They had what they called a utility man. The utility man was a guy that actually wasn't trained to do anything except sweep. But they did have a utility man for every bay. But at the end of the day, if I had finished all of my work and I still had 30 minutes left, I would take my torches apart and clean my torches. I got little wear thingy-ma-bobs that you slide up and down on the tip and clean the slag out of the tip, and I'd clean my torches and I'd put them all away and prepare them for the next day, and then I'd get a broom and sweep up my area. And my day shift supervisor told me after, or when I gave my notice and was ready to leave, he said, "You've got a job here anytime you want it. If I'm still here, you've got a job. You call Al Pizzotto, I'll put you to work." I've never had anybody that had a 97% efficiency rating ever before. I wished he hadn't have said that, because there were times in planting a church that it would have been easy to give up and went back, because I knew I had a job there. But by the same token, it was an excellent testimony to leave behind. Be a person that works hard, works smart, works without supervision. A person that sees work, and then here's the next thing. You need to constantly be learning new things. Don't be satisfied to say, "Well, I already know how to do too many things." No, be learning new things. I went to work as a flame cutter in the factory, and I kept noticing that the guy who was the chainman, now I'm going to say this, it's a little humorous. They call him a hooker. Okay, well, he was a hooker because he actually worked with cables and hooks to pick up these army tanks, these 16-ton army tanks. We made the armor hulls that M60 army tanks went in. They had put two Dodge 440 engines in there and one to run each track. But we made the armor for that, and so it had to be picked up with an overhead crane. And the overhead crane would come and they would drop hooks, so they called the guy a hooker. Now, he was a chainman. That's a much more, but he was in the factory, the slang was he was a hooker. And the old guy that was the hooker, he didn't work very hard, and he got to where he was only showing up about half of the time. So I went to the boss. I said, my burning's all caught up. I said, "If you want me to, I'll hook." He said, "You don't mind?" I said, "No, I don't mind." Because actually it was a downgrade, but I'd rather do that and be busy than not be busy. Wouldn't you? I'd rather produce something than nothing. Wouldn't you? So I learned how to do something else. And it wasn't long and I learned how to do something else. And I'm confident that if I would have stayed in that factory, I would have been a foreman there today, maybe a supervisor, maybe be running the place. I don't know. But you understand, you keep growing, keep learning. So we work hard, we work smart, we work without supervision, we see work, we learn new work, and then here's the next thing. Young people, listen to this. If you can learn this, you'll keep advancing in any company. You learn to work with others. Anybody can work by himself. But when you can work with a miserable, cantankerous, no good for nothing person and get along with them, man, that's impressive to management. They come along and they say, "Man, you can not only work with others, but you can actually motivate them to do a little more than they normally would do. My goodness, I'm going to pat you on the back and I'm going to promote you anytime I get a chance." Learn to work with others and then learn to lead work. Learn to be a leader. All of these things, dads and moms, we need to teach our kids about work. Tomorrow's Labor Day. It's not just a holiday to, you know, go have a picnic. We'll have a picnic and a softball game, and it'll be fun. But Labor Day is to celebrate the American worker that made this great country. You know, there's workers that made these pews. There's workers that made this carpet. Workers that made this furniture, workers that made these garments, workers that made the timber and the gypsum board and the materials around us, workers that made the concrete and poured the concrete and finished the concrete, workers that made the car you drove to church. Workers who built a house that you live in. Workers who, in the food chain of America, made food that you will enjoy as a bedtime snack when you go home and eat. Workers. Workers, what made America great, not welfare. Workers. It aggravates me to death when you listen to the NBC, CBS, ABC, all of those news shows. They keep talking about the American consumer, but I never hear them say anything about the American producer. Everybody thinks about the consumer. What about the producer? I don't want to be a consumer. I want to be a producer. I want to raise more food than I eat. I want to make more money than I spend. I want to produce more goods than I consume. And that ought to be the desire of every honest Christian citizen of this country. So tomorrow's Labor Day, let's celebrate the worker. Let's choose to be a worker. Boys and girls, I want to encourage you not to be a lazy oaf. You be a person that grows up and gets a job and works hard and works smart and learns new ways to work and produces more than you consume. I want you to be a good citizen, and I want you to do it for the glory of Jesus Christ. And at the judgment seat of Christ, you'll not have to hang your head in shame if you've learned to work. And listen, all the time you're working, it'll keep you out of a lot of trouble. You know, the people that get in the most trouble are the people that have got nothing else to do. Keep busy, and it's a lot easier to keep right. Would you bow with me, please, for prayer?